Hi, welcome to Creative Coding with Windows 8 JavaScript applications using processing. In this sketch, we're going to build on the ones that came before it, and we're going to learn about easing and moving a mouse. You know, up till now, we've been looking at how do you create classes, put them on the stage, and have things and move around from their own volition, right? We created a dot class. That dot class had its own velocity x, velocity y, but we haven't interacted with the user at all. It hasn't really been interactive. We've kind of created these animations and let them play out. Today we're going to look at how do you get to start interacting with the user. The easiest way to do that is leveraging their mouse. Now if you look at processing, you'll have it find a function called mouse, right? Or on mouse move, a lot of these older languages have it. In Windows 8, introduces a concept of pointer because not all of our devices are mouse driven. If we have surfaces or we have our tablets, right? All of this uses this concept of pointer. Even if you're running these sketches on the phone, you have your touch devices, you have pen, you have your traditional mouse. So in the Microsoft world, this is all wrapped up under this concept of pointer. Processing JS, we made some tweaks so that it could register these pointer events as well. So that's what we're going to look at today. So following the mouse or pointer if you're working on a touch device, and how do you get these elements to interact with it? As before, we'll start off basic, and then we'll quickly get into the making it look a lot more exciting. So as we start up this next sketch, we're going to see that my default sketch in PDE is set up with what we have seen before, what we learned in the last series of tutorials. So I have a class here called Blob. Blob doesn't have any functions on it yet. Very basic, has its x and y positions. For right now, it has a vx and vy to hold its speed. We have an empty draw function. And if you come up to the top, this should all look familiar. We're creating an array of blob objects we're calling blob. We have a variable called total blobs, which we'll use to drive our for loops. And we have, of course, our width and height. We're also defining two colors. We're going to define a stroke color this time because we are going to use strokes. And we're drawing a fill color. Here's our setup. This looks like every sketch we've done till now. We're defining a width and height and then calling it size. We're telling it to smooth things out, and for right now we're simply drawing a black background. So if I were to run this, we see our framework should be solid, we get a black background, but we haven't created any blobs or we're not rendering any blobs yet. But this is where our framework starts off. So let's start filling this up. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to start populating my blobs array. So I'll create a for loop, just as we did at the end of the last lesson, from I to 0, while I is less than total blobs, I plus plus. First thing we do is create a local blob object, and we'll call it blob, is equal to new blob. We're going to give it just as we did with the dots, we're going to randomly position each one of our blobs. And for right now, let's randomly give it a velocity for right now. This is going to change, but just to make sure that our populating the array and our rendering the array is all valid. And then we fill it into our array. There we go. We're creating a temporary blob called B, giving it some properties, and then permanently storing it into our array in our setup function. So if we come down to our draw function, for now let's give it a fill of red just to test things out. We would say ellipse is equal to So let's think about this. We've populated our blob array. We're in our draw functions, we're drawing them wherever we want. We're currently not filling out the background, so we'll most likely get some trails here. So let's go ahead and fill in the background, because for this effect, we're not going to use trails. So we'll just give it a solid black for right now. Giving it a fill color, iterating through it, and drawing it up. So if we run this, we should first test, and we should get where we ended at last time, some blobs moving around. Now, because we haven't updated its x and position with its velocity, that's why they're static. But before we look at their velocity, because again, we're not going to tell them to go wherever they want. We are going to have them start moving toward the mouse. We're going to have things move toward the mouse. Let's make it a little bit easier. Without changing much of it, I basically only want to have one blob for right now to prove a point. Let me come back to my draw function. It'll still be white. I'll make it a little bit bigger. All right. If I run this, I should now get a red circle. Randomly put on the stage, it's currently not moving. A draw function is being, an animated engine is being called, but it's just constantly putting itself on X. I'm not changing the position of X in any way yet. Now the handler, or the function to know where you are, to know where the pointer is, you define it like this. Just like we created a setup and a draw function, I can come up and if I type in void pointer move on my modified processing.js file, which comes with this package, which comes with the matching project for the series of lessons. The modified processing.js file has added to it a pointer move event that will be fired whenever any of these MS pointer events are filed on our devices. So this function will be called whenever we move our mouse or we touch the screen and we drag it around. Now, in order to use this, let's start storing its position up here in two variables I'm going to call target x and target y. We could call it mouse x and mouse y if you want, or finger x, finger y, whatever you want. Because of how we're going to use this, I'm going to call it target for right now, because this is the target of where we're going to want things to eventually get to. Now, if those are the variables, we would populate it whenever this pointer is moved, and we know where that pointer, be it finger or mouse, is by referencing the value off of this e file right here. So we can say target x is equal to e.offset x, target y is equal to e.offset y. So this function is going to be called whenever my mouse or finger is moved. Whenever it is moved, it's going to set the position of that current command into this variable target x and y so that I can use this a little bit later. If I come down to my draw function, if I say blobs x is equal to target x, and if I say blobs y is equal to target y, at this point, it should be pretty clear what's happening. I'll move my function, it'll change the values of target x and y. Every draw command, it's going to be physically moving this blob to wherever my mouse is at that given time, and then it'll draw it there. Now, there's nothing sexy about this, but let's draw it to make sure that our logic's correct so far. We'll see that our event handler is working. As I move my mouse, it's going to be instantly placing the circle into that position. Okay. Okay, let's get back to the code. Now, there's an easing algorithm in any language you want. That's kind of the secret of easing things. This doesn't look that good because the mouse is kind of sketchy. People move their fingers around. A lot of times we want things that are graceful. There's an easing algorithm that's pretty much at the core of everything, and you can apply it any language you want. I basically use it in at least 98% of every project I do, there's some variation of this algorithm. It's basically the bread and butter algorithm of creative coding for these types of things. And it goes like this. Instead of hard coding it, you say where you want to be, which in this case is target X, minus where you are. Then you multiply that by a percentage. The bigger the percentage, the closer it gets to one, the more it's making an instant step. The important part here is instead of just setting it equal to, you have to do plus equal to. Let's code it, we'll show it, and then we'll come back and conceptually explain it. Okay, again, always the same. Where you want to be minus where you are times a percentage will work for anything. Let's run this or refresh this. And what we'll notice now is as I move my mouse, it's a lot more fluid and elegant. Now I can make it more responsive by slowing down the easing a little bit more. Right? And we kind of get these cool effects where as I move, if I move quickly, it starts moving quickly, and then as it gets closer to my mouse, it starts slowing down. This is where the elegance in code comes in, because every step is being calculated based on how much more it has to get to. Let's look at this again. You might have heard of something called Zeno's paradox, right? Where he said you can never walk out the door because if you take 50% of the distance, right? If you're constantly taking 50% of the distance somewhere, you'll never get there, right? If I'm 10 feet away, and I'll calculate how far away I am. You know, so this would be a 50% Zeno's paradox, right? If this is where I want to be, and this is where I am, by subtracting them, that gives me the distance based on direction, right? So if I'm at 10 and I want to be at 0, so if my target was at 0 and my blob was currently at x value 10, I figure out how far away I am. In this case, right, I'd be a distance of 10, and then I multiply it by half, by times 0.5. So this step, this single step, is calculated this way. It's half the distance. So that first step will be half the distance. But the next time we run this now, I'd now be at 5. So the next step from 0 to 5, I'd take half that distance. So my next step would only be 2.5, because that's half. So our first step was 5. Our next step's only 2.5. Right after that, it'd be 1.25, and then 0.675, right? And then 0.3, whatever, right? So every step starts off big steps, and every step is incrementally getting smaller because your distance that you need to cover is getting smaller. So by doing it this way, by multiplying it by a percentage of distance remaining and not by a fixed velocity, you get these very beautiful easing algorithms. Now, because computers work very fast, doing it 0.5 has always been way too fast for me. If you really want to see the easing algorithm, you want to be around the take a tenth of a step every frame, because you're drawing this draw update 60 frames a second, right? So again, this is why it's working. I move when my target moves far away, its first couple frames are very fast, but as it gets closer, it starts easing and starts slowing down as it gets to the position. This is an easing algorithm. And again, you can use it for position, you can eventually use it for color, you can use it for sound, you can use it for whatever you want, but it's the core algorithm. Where you want to be minus where you are times a percentage. Now, let's start really making this a little bit fancier. One thing we've been doing that has been kind of cheating is we've been doing all the ellipse commands inside of one big draw function. In other words, we've been using the classes to calculate their positions, but the objects themselves haven't been drawing themselves. They've just been keeping track of their position and their velocity. We can start making this a little bit more advanced. Let's stop this. Let's start expanding out our blob class so that every object is responsible for its own drawing. This is important when you want to start using more than one type of visual object, right? If you want spaceships and asteroids and lasers, you know, and astronauts, you'd have these asteroid class, spaceship class, and then you would tell it to draw yourself, right? Whatever you are, draw yourself. You didn't want to put that all in your draw command. So let's start growing up our code here by doing it this way. Inside of our blob class, just as we had an update function that we called from our draw command, we could have its own draw command that we wanted to do, but let's jump straight into doing something a little bit cooler. We're going to have a function called renderStroke. And a function called renderFill. Now, we're using stroke not in the technical point. If I created an ellipse object comes with its fill and comes with its stroke, which is its outline. Here, what we're actually going to do, because of the trick we're going to want to pull off, is we're going to not use stroke. We're going to define no stroke in our code, right up here. Because we're going to kind of draw our own stroke on our objects by drawing two circles, one a background circle and then the other one a slightly smaller circle. So the background color will show through and it'll look like a stroke. The reason why we're doing it this way will become apparent shortly once we see the effect. But for right now, let's just realize these will be two different functions. One function will be called renderStroke. It's going to create an ellipse at whatever the position it's at. Let's also define the circle that creates the stroke, what its diameter should be. And the circle that will be the fill, what its fill should be. So for our stroke, we'll say at x and y, stroke size, right? Now our fill will be pretty much the same thing. The difference being, instead of us using the stroke diameter, which will be bigger, we'll use the fill diameter right down here. So if I come over here, and instead of drawing the ellipse like this, I want to say fill, let's define those colors up here. We already had defined up here our strokes, we want it to be red, our fills, we want it to be white. So since we had defined those colors, when I come down here to my draw function, I'll say fill will be stroke color. And then we tell, like good objects, we tell whoever you are, whatever blob I'm talking to, I've set my fill color. So now, render your stroke. And now I'm going to say render your fill. Hopefully I've spelled everything correctly. Okay. Again, not a big change, but conceptually it's a bit different, right? We're still moving the x and y position of blob, but first we're setting a stroke color and then telling blob, you take care of yourself. You draw your own stroke. And then we're setting a fill color, and we're telling blob, you draw your own fill. Because all of the circles we're going to draw will end up, we want them to look the same for this particular sketch. That's why we can universally do it right here. If we wanted each one of our blobs to have a different color, we could have gone ahead and filled it up here and under the render stroke, had it locally say fill whatever my color is. But we're going to be drawing all of our blobs the same color with the same stroke and circle for this sketch. So that's why we're kind of universally putting it here before we're iterating through all of the blobs. So if I run this now, and we get no errors, our circle should be a little bit bigger. We see it has a red and white stroke on it. And these are two different rendering calls. We're drawing a red circle, and then we're drawing a white circle a little bit smaller on top of it. Now, what's interesting is because, let's do a couple things. we collapse this down to 1 to really look at that easing algorithm. If we bring this back up to 10, when we first run this, we're going to see 10 random dots, but then they're all going to coalesce onto the pointer. But once we do that, you're not going to see any more differences, random, and they've all coalesced up here to 0. Because as I move them, they all have the same update commands. They're all following the same update logic. So they're all starting at the same position, moving to the same mouse position, so they're all taking the exact same step. But it's important because we're building up to an effect here. Now, this is regular easing, as we did, where you want to be minus where you are times a percentage. But there's also the ability of making elastic. Once you conceptually understand easing, making the jump to elastic is pretty straightforward. So let's talk how that works out. And for this, it's over here. A quick second, double check that I'm good. We've been moving all of the under our draw commands is where we've been doing the physical manipulations for this object. In the previous sketch, the objects were in charge of their own motion, just like the objects are in charge of their own rendering here. Here we're kind of not doing what we've said ourselves. We're kind of manipulating them here when we really should be saying, here's where I want you to be. You take care of your own motion. So first, let's pull this out into a function. So we're going to create a function on blob, on our blob class. And we're going to call it spring toward. This is going to receive now, and now we're going to look at passing parameters. This, whenever we call it, we're going to send it in two values, basically a x target and a y target. So we're going to say blob, this whatever particular blob, spring toward, and then we're going to pass it an x and y. Of course, we're going to pass it wherever the pointer is. It's our target x and y. Before this function, it's going to grab those values, and in this internal function, whatever we pass in is going to locally be called underscore x underscore y. So here we want to say, now we've created these velocity x and velocity y values, which we haven't been using. So let's start using those now. We're going to turn them into our steps. So our step is equal to where we want to be minus where we are times a percentage. Again, we have a magic number. So let me come back up here, and let me give every ball will have so again, what we're doing, we have our blob class. We are now having a variable called easing x and easing y. For now, they will all be the same, so they'll all be easing at the same speed. We're going to change this individually toward the end of the sketch, but for right now, it'll all be here. So our velocity, we're going to say the exact same algorithm. We're going to be passing in our target x, which is where our mouse is, where we want to be, minus where we are, times a percentage. Where we want to be, minus where we are, times a percentage. If we're doing it, this is currently representing the step. So then we would say plus equals to the step. When I taught you the easing algorithm, I showed it all to you in one line, right? Where you want to be is plus equal to this. Here we're breaking it out, so we're calculating the step first, which would be equal. Once we have the step, we're still doing the exact same algorithm. We've now split it up into four different lines. Calculating the step, and then we're plus equals the step, the exact same thing. If we run this, whoops. First, we have to use it. So it's now in our blob function. So up here, instead of doing it all like this, again, we were calculating. Basically, we've said this is now equal to blob's vx, and now we're plus equaling the vx. So instead of doing that, we can say blob's eye dot, did we say spring or ease? What we called it, spring toward. Spring toward, and then we say target X, target Y. A lot of cleaning house, but if we run it, it won't look too much different yet. But here we go, they all coalesced, and as we move, it's the effect we still saw because they all still have the exact same easing value. But conceptually, they're all now self-governed. They're all moving themselves according to their own local properties. We still haven't introduced easing. We've simply cleaned house. Now let's show what easing looks like. Oh, excuse me, we did easing. We didn't show elasticity. So let's look at what elasticity looks like. To make elasticity work, we've had this step. You do this. You're calculating the step, but then you're adding it. You're not wiping it out. In order to not just shoot off into infinity. So basically, if I were starting off, I had my step, and my first step, again, I was 10 pixels away. My first step would be half my distance, or a tenth of my distance, right? So it would be 5. If my easing was 0.5, right? If I was taking half the distance steps, my first step, I would have taken 5 pixels. My next step is calculated as 2.5 pixels, but since I'm adding to it, I would actually be taking 7.5, right? 5, my old step, plus my new step. This will have me way overshoot my target. Now, if I didn't dampen it, I would overshoot it, and as soon as I overshot it, I would start calculating negative values. So as I overshoot it, I start calculating wanting to go this way until I calculate enough steps, and those steps start accumulating, and then I overshoot back again. So by simply adding your steps cumulatively instead of replacing your steps, you start getting really crazy, infinitely elastic circles. The circles are constantly shooting toward their target, overshooting it, and then recalculating and shooting back the other way. So you don't see anything happening. It just looks like chaos, but they're all trying to follow the cursor, but they keep overshooting it by a tremendous amount. In order to do this, just as we learned last time, a little bit of chaos and a little bit of dampening, we need to dampen this down. So once we're calculating it, just dampen it down a little bit, times say 0.92. Now I'm going to dampen down, there's no rule that says these have to be the same. You can dampen one a little bit different than the other. If we add a little bit more friction to Y, it'll get closer to zero faster, so it'll start wobbling a little bit. But by taking your steps and constantly adding friction to them, bringing them back to zero, it's going to stop overshooting and start giving you a much more elastic effect, because it'll eventually zero in to zero. As the steps get smaller, they will also be shrinking. So let's run this and see what it looks like. Good. Now you saw that effect when they first happened because they were all starting in different positions. Since they were starting in different positions, they all started off with their very first steps they calculated all different from each other. That's why when it first happened, you saw them all wiggle, but once they all kind of eased down into zero velocity, now wherever I go, although we have 10 circles, they're all going at the exact same speed. So that's why, again, it looks like it's only one circle. Let me refresh this again so you can see. The very first time, you see a lot of circles, but at this point, it's kind of lost the effect. So let's start fixing that. We can fix that by coming up here to setup. When we first set up the blobs, up here in our setup function, we were creating blobs. We were giving them random positions. This random velocity actually doesn't even matter anymore. But the important point, and again, not to lose anybody, the reason I said it doesn't matter is because we're constantly calculating the random velocity based on where they are. And it starts off as zero, so that's fine. So we're randomly placing them, but let's give them each a unique easing value. Now, these are magic numbers that you can tweak. The number that we were using in our previous example that looked pretty good was around 0.2, right? Or 0.20, if you want to think about it. If we made it 0.12, you know, it would be elastic a little bit longer, right? But at 0.2, that's what we were testing. So here we're trying to guess a number that will be somewhere around that range. So here we're basically saying some of you start at 0.02, and then pick a number, you know, from 0 to 0.1. So this is going to give us a number range of anywhere from 2 to 12, right? Because you're starting at 2 and then you're guessing a random number from 0 to 10. So from, you know, 2% to 12%, it's going to pick for X and it'll pick a different one for Y. So every circle is going to ease toward the position a little bit different along its x-axis from its y-axis, and then every circle will have its own unique easing as well. Sometimes it sounds hard, but again, look at it. We've only introduced a couple core algorithms in the past two steps. Here we're playing with it. If you don't like the way this looks, tweak the numbers and see what it comes out. But please understand the concepts. We want to ease from around 2% to around 12%. Let's see what that looks like. We are doing it individually for every single blob that we're creating. At this point, we start giving them individual personalities. So let's run. There we go. So now as we move, every circle is going to ease toward the target a little bit differently. And then so we see them all kind of line up and stack themselves up. So if I start moving, it really starts showing up. Now, the good news is all the math is done for this lesson. The last thing we want to look at, though, is now visually. This in itself is kind of cool, but you know, since we're drawing the strokes and the fills separately, if we draw all the strokes in the background and all the fills on the foreground for all the dots, it will actually really look like a blob because every circle is being drawn individually. So for every circle, I'm drawing its stroke and its fill, but the next circle I draw in front of it, that stroke will be over the previous circle's fill. So let's split up our draw command to first draw all the strokes, all the big circle, all the red circles, and then once it's drawn all the red circles so that no red circles will ever overlap the white circles, then draw all the white circles. And then it'll start making this look like a really cool jelly blob. So let's do that as the last step of what we do. Now, we don't need to spring it twice, so I'm going to come in here and I'm going to go to my draw command. It is right here. We're looping through the blobs here. We're having them spring toward the target, so we're positioning them, and we only have to position them once, right? You only have to do this once because we want the red circles and the white circles to always match up. We're setting our stroke color, and then we're drawing the red circles, the render strokes. Here, these are the only two things we want to basically pull out from here and put them in their own for loop. So we're going to loop through all the blobs, calculating their position, drawing their backgrounds. But then to make it nicer, we're then going to loop through all the blobs again just to draw their foregrounds, just to draw the white marshmallowy center. And yes, if you're an advanced programmer, you'll realize at this point we really don't need those fill commands inside the for loop. It's not really doing any harm, but calling that command several times, we can pull out the fill commands if we want to. Again, you don't have to. It's just good coding practice at this point to make it easier to understand what's going on. So we're setting it to red, calculating the position, drawing all the red circles, and then looping once again. We no longer need to calculate because we already did that once, but now we just want to draw the white circles. And at this point, we're pretty much done with our sketch. If we run this, we now get an elastic easing blob, and this looks pretty cool. We get an elastic easing blob that as we move around seems to break apart into its component elements and settle down into a perfect circle as all of these individual constituents all ease toward zero elasticity. That's pretty cool. Go through the code, tweak those numbers, really get a sense for what's going on. We introduced a critical algorithm this time on our easing algorithm, and then we saw how to expand it out to not just be easing, but to also include elasticity. We also did some really cool things with the rendering stack in terms of separating and how we want to layer our draw commands. Please play around with this. Feel free to hit us up with any questions, and let's jump into the next lesson.